I've done some research with CHROs and chief people officers, and I've talked about their needing to become more business athletes, because in the survey that I conducted, the first CHRO survey that I conducted, 40% of them said they wish they had known more about how to manage things like finance and operations.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-Proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Now, today's guest is Shari Chernak, Chief People Officer at Isaacson Miller, an operator, advisor, and ICF certified executive coach who partners with leaders at the intersection of people strategy and transformation with experience across Fortune 100, PE, and VC-backed environments. Shari has led business transformation, org design, HR operations, change and communications. She's passionate about building differentiated capabilities, aligning operating models to strategy, and designing cultures that accelerate performance. And all that said, Shari brings a pragmatic lens to AI in the enterprise. And that's what we're going to be talking about, where HR should lead, where it must partner, and how learning and performance management can become levers for value creation. So Shari, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm good to be here.
So let's table set a little bit. So you've been on the CHRO side, you've been consulting, you've been on the coaching side. Tell us a little bit about what your focus has been.
I was just telling somebody this morning, we were having a career conversation, and I said I'm definitely at that age where people who are just coming up in the corporate world are saying, oh, you have such an interesting career. Tell me how it happened. And I always tell them it's a few wrong turns, a few lucky accidents. I probably didn't plan it that way, but I started out after a past life in marketing that I quickly ended, but that I still tap into some of the skill set that marketing can bring. I started my early career as a consultant, and I definitely have a consultant mindset in terms of thinking about projects and quick wins and things I can get done in fixed timeframes. I am definitely a get things done kind of person, and I like to do that in a couple of different ways. One is by leading big change and transformation initiatives. So I spent a lot of my formative years in change management and what they now call change communications, although they didn't have a name for it back in the day. And so I still bring that discipline to my work. And then as I progressed in my career, I began to do a lot of coaching, at first informally with my clients, with my direct reports. And I like to have both the organizational lens, where I'm trying to help the organization evolve to maximize its impact, and at the same time, the individuals within organizations, as well as individuals in organizations that I may not be working with at all. So I have a little side hustle as a coach, is really about helping individuals maximize their impact so that they can, in turn, help their organizations. So that's my focus. I love transformation. I used to joke that if there's a current state and a future state combination, I've probably helped some organization get there at a certain point in my career. So I've done a lot of M&A, enterprise transformation, startup scaling, turnaround, and just the world around us is changing. Our clients and customers are changing, and so are their expectations. How do we adapt to this world. And then there's obviously all of the technology and digital change that is happening both within and around us.
So change is the name of the game, and transformation, which is change accelerated with a particular goal in mind. So I want to ask you, with the age of AI, what is a transformation that is being demanded of the CHRO role?
So the CHRO role is interesting because, like HR itself, the expectations for the CHRO have evolved. So if you think about the previous generations of CHROs, maybe going back to the 70s and 80s, just as organizations were changing from personnel to HR, there was a big administrative component that was primary. And then in the past 2, 3, 4 decades, we've been talking about HR being more strategic, a strategic advisor, the triad of the CEO, the CFO, and the CHRO being like the holy trinity of an organization. And so that has been happening. I've done some research with CHROs and chief people officers, and I've talked about their needing to become more business athletes, because in the survey that I conducted, the first CHRO survey that I conducted, 40% of them said they wish they had known more about how to manage things like finance and operations. And so in order to contribute maximally, they need to be able to communicate about all things business related and deeply understand their business so they can not only have that seat at the table, but really influence and drive the organization's people and workforce strategy. And now we're asking them to do something that they may not feel comfortable with, because technology and HR are not typically two words that roll off the tongue together like peanut butter and jelly. They are not often linked together. And HR is not typically invested deeply in technology or technologists. People who have technology backgrounds do not frequently say, oh, HR is what I want to do. And the pool has been pretty shallow in terms of where HR and technology have tended to meet. And to say nothing of employees always get short shrift in terms of application design, although hopefully that is changing. HR and CHROs now need to become comfortable with new technology in ways that maybe they have not historically done so. And the CHRO really needs to be a leader in the AI discussion and dialogue and transformation, because ultimately it's all about how AI is integrated into workflows and work. AI is the future of work, and any CHRO who maybe likes to think, I like the future of work, but I'm a little uncertain about whether I want to delve into AI, is not really solving either problem.
So you mentioned several aspects of the transformation for the role and the function. Before we get into any of those, I want to actually ask, why you think these things are happening. So why is there the demand is moving from administration to strategy to being business athletes and towards understanding tech and data? And a related question is who is demanding that of the function? Because it's one thing to say people believe that of themselves, but do you have any thoughts on the folks that we serve around the executive roundtable, or employees, our customers across all stakeholders? Are there signs that they're demanding different things of us?
Yeah, I think so. And thinking about my consulting career, when I used to do HR strategy and HR transformation, often it would be the CEO who called and said, I'm not getting what I need from my CHRO or chief people officer. They're a great benefits person, but when it comes to talent, they're not really interested, or they're not there, or that they're not on par with the other C-suite executives in terms of what they bring to our strategic dialogue. Experientially, there have been CEOs and other C-suite teams that the cry has come from within the building in that regard.
What are they looking for?
They can't always articulate it in terms of, I need my CHRO to be more strategic, but there's usually a problem that the CHRO or chief people officer isn't solving. It may be high attrition. During the Great Resignation, it's also, we can't find this talent, which may or may not have been the CHRO's fault, but there's definitely a talent and employee experience and rewards component that requires being strategic and being competitive in the talent market that you don't get from, you know, the compliance-minded CHRO archetype of the past. Not that compliance can be cast away. And one of the fun things about being a CHRO is the plate never gets emptied of anything. There's always just more stuff on the plate. Now it's piled even higher. And then I think in terms of the corporate athlete, again, that's something that I would sometimes hear when I would do org design or organizational assessments. There would be some kind of murmuring around different C-suite executives bringing a different level of game. If everyone else is a major league player and the CHRO is AA, what does that look like? Maybe they're not contributing as much. Maybe they only are comfortable talking about people things, and they're not comfortable talking about something like, should we launch a new product? Should we open a new location? Should we put a plant in the city? And of course, those are all issues that have a significant people component, even though they are not maybe the, you know, primarily people issues that CHROs and chief people officers are most comfortable with. So that's the business athlete. That's the strategic mindset as well. And now this AI piece, there are organizations that are sidelining CHROs and chief people officers. And there are some CHROs who are opting not to participate or who are participating as peripheral characters in this event that we're in. But they do so to the detriment of their organization.
It seems like, in your view, experientially, the expectations of the C-suite and especially the CEO of the CHRO is a little bit in line with some of the survey data you were referencing, which is about self-reflection as well. And it moves towards, let's dig in a bit more on this business athlete concept. The idea is that a CHRO should be, and the expectation from the C-suite is that CHRO is helping answer questions of business strategy and how the people component, of course, contributes to that. I think you spoke, one example you had was, should we open a plant in the city or should we go to the market with this product? Are there other examples like that? And isn't the reality that those are questions that are answered by either, I don't know, a go-to-market function or sales or marketing or a product or the groups that are the functional leaders there?
Yeah. At their peril, I think. So should we launch a product ever? Is maybe one kind of question that is primarily market-driven. Should we launch it in this quarter when we know that there are competing initiatives and we're going to get a sloppy product to market? Maybe the CHRO is the person who encourages the product team to tap the brakes a little bit or to help them understand at least the risk and benefit of waiting versus going to market during a time that is already pretty full of other responsibilities and customer commitments. Similarly, should we open a plant in the city let's say it's an advanced manufacturing plant and we don't have certain kinds of engineering talent in the city, that's not necessarily something that another C-suite executive is going to surface. So most questions have a people component within them. In some cases, it may be buried beneath layers of other questions. And if CHROs are reluctant to participate, they may not surface some of those issues, and those may not arise as quickly or as thoroughly or at all. And then, since I also have done work with senior teams, if everyone is just bringing their siloed perspectives and their siloed topics, they're not really functioning as a governing executive team. So I should be, if I understand the business and my goal is to protect the well-being and growth and reputation of the business, I should be weighing in as a CHRO on things that may not actually have that much to do with the people function or the people. If I think that something is a foolish financial decision because I've read the balance sheet and I understand some of our financial risks and obligations, I should say something if I think that there is a chorus of people who feel a different way and nobody is necessarily voicing an opinion that is in line with mine. I shouldn't be reticent just because it's not in my job description. I put job descriptions together for our executive team to do succession planning and talent reviews. And there's always a functional responsibilities section and there's an enterprise responsibilities section. So what do you need to do with your...
organizational-wide.
Yep, with your CIO hat, and what do you need to do as a member of the executive team?
So if you are giving practical advice to your peers about what you can do to become more of a business athlete, what are actions they can do to get comfortable or to actually develop the skill sets to make meaningful contributions to all of these different types of enterprise-wide questions?
Sure. It could be mentorship, either from another CHRO who has done the same or from somebody in a different part of the business. It could be cross-functional collaboration, learning by doing and learning by being challenged. And it could be old-fashioned learning and studying. And that can be reading, that can be taking courses, it can be getting an executive MBA. It can take a lot of different forms.
But a sign here that you're contributing at the level that you believe CHROs really should be in terms of being at the maximum service to the organization is that you're helping answer and have a seat at the table for the key questions that are being brought up strategically. Now, I feel like this whole conversation so far, for the most part, is prologue, because this is all true and has been true probably in terms of expectations for quite some time. And there's this new element that is probabilistic. It's technology related. It seems to have a potential impact across the board in every function, how every function in an organization might operate, and as well as, you know, potentially every aspect of what CHRO tries to impact. And of course, I'm talking about the rise of artificial intelligence and especially LLMs over the last few years. So what is the transformation and expectation? Let's dig in a bit there. And from the CHRO and the HR function with the age of AI.
So I think I like to think about it in concentric circles. So there's within the HR or people team or whatever people like to call their team is learning and experimenting and adopting like everyone else. So there's AI for HR. And then from an enterprise standpoint, it's about using the levers that HR has to drive AI adoption and appropriate use within the organization. Those are primarily performance management. So if an organization is trying to adopt, performance management is a strong lever, goal setting and measuring impact, as well as goal attainment. HR is the process owner for performance management. So making sure that AI strategy is reflected in organizational and individual goal setting. And the other, of course, is learning. And that is about making sure that there are many different kinds of opportunities for people to learn, from online courses to mentoring or buddying up to making sure that the right people are exposed and assigned to the right program so that they can learn on the job and build that muscle. And then there are other elements as well. If we're trying to have a more digitally adept workforce, obviously hiring and workforce planning, not to say that those are the only two ways, but the two biggest arrows that HR has in its quiver for this are performance management and learning, as I see it.
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. In terms of leverage points to impact the broader organization, right?
So yep.
Let's get a little bit more tactical, because I think a common pattern I'm seeing a lot of organizations are at this kind of point as we're getting into late 2025 is that there is a board and executive level understanding that there is a need for an AI strategy, or there's something that's been developed at a top level. If you're a CHRO in such an organization, like, what are the things, what are the steps that you should be taking to make an impact to help see that through, see that strategy through in the org?
Hopefully you should go back in the time machine and be involved in the strategy if you weren't. But let's say the strategy has been set and there's a high level document with three or four big goals and some initiatives. The first thing is to say, okay, where does HR plug in? Is it in training? Is it in change management? Do we have the right people assigned to teams? Is this something that our workforce is capable of executing on? Or do we need to build, buy, or borrow talent in order to do that? So that's why I say go back in the time machine if you can, right? Because an organization can set an unrealistic expectation, and the organization can be either culturally or skillfully incapable of achieving the AI objectives. There could be a huge amount of resistance. That's why I say there are two big levers, but then you can see that there are really many other areas of intersection between the AI strategy and the people strategy, and also capabilities and the reality on the ground. And that's where CHROs really need to be involved in iterating and pushing back on certain things, bringing up ideas, and then also thinking about, okay, how are we actually going to execute this? This is a people-dependent and work-dependent strategy and set of initiatives that people are expected to execute on.
And let me ask this next question. It's a little bit related to the first topic you mentioned within AI, which is AI for HR. But if you go broader than that, there's this budget pressure reality. I feel like that is coming and facing every functional leader in some kind of way. The idea is that AI should help us be more operationally efficient in any kind of function. And maybe then the ask is to do more with less. Where are you seeing, or are you seeing trends in where budget pressure is most acute?
I think that's interesting because this is where, and I know it's not a question yet. Where are you? Are you like an off to the races AI person, like full steam ahead, be early adopter, first in class at everything? Or are you a laggard and a Luddite and you want everybody else to screw up and you'll learn from their mistakes? And personally, I'm in the middle. I'm a user and an early adopter personally. And I think that there is a lot of nuance and pragmatism and how to adopt. So there are studies out there and every study has a counter study or a counter claim, but organizations that say, okay, tomorrow we're going to replace this entire team with AI are taking a little bit of a risk. Could be a different risk depending on what kind of team they're trying to replace. I always use the example of we're going to replace a customer service with a chatbot. How fun is that for the customer? And it's a, you wipe a few salaries off the board right away, but what do you lose in customer experience, customer loyalty, and so forth? So I think
it's
something that
revenue, you know, that's
yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And so I think it's something that should be done with deliberation and not in haste. And this is another one of those things where if there's an efficiency team that is saying, okay, how can we do cost takeout? And it's finance and operations and HR isn't at the table or in the dialogue until the very end. And they're just asked to execute and give people their severance package and say the canned speech and so forth. That is also a missed opportunity to say, let's step back a little bit and let's think about what these people bring to their work, to the organization. Should we redeploy them in some other roles in which they're capable because they actually have skills that you're about to push out the door along with the ones that you think you don't need? So I think there is, I like the idea of piloting, of thinking about a kind of risk matrix in terms of an organization's AI strategy and how quickly it wants to replace people with AI. And there are a number of factors that go into it: the maturity of the technology, what is being replaced and at what cost, and then also, you know, how this fits in with any sort of broader organizational strategy. So always thinking about the externalities that may not be core to the primary conversation that we're having. Is this going to hurt us down the road? Is this going to be a big culture change? Are we going to have to rehire people and take a financial hit on laying off and then rehiring or going out to the market again?
Yeah, you bring up pilots. Do you have any examples of where you've gone forward and stopped and came back because risk matrix did not warrant like going forward? Or vice versa, what are there examples either within the HR function or like more broadly that you've seen there's some successes, at least in your view? And I take your point that it's very organizational and strategic and market dependent, but love an example if you got one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a couple of pilots, and this is not where AI has replaced a person or a team. It's more about how can AI speed up certain things. And so I have seen learning is a really interesting example where I think it can cut both ways. So somebody can develop a course much more quickly. There are so many AI tools from research to creating PowerPoint slides or whatever kind of design medium, using design tools to creating videos, to creating different personas and doing scenario analysis. And there's a ton of creativity that organizations can invest into this. Organizations can pull lessons learned from operational environments, from manufacturing facilities to call centers, and they can do what I like to call the quick performance and learning feedback loop where there is a virtuous cycle of getting feedback, getting insight from data, and then infusing that into the way people work better through learning. There are some organizations that say, let's not actually have a live human teaching this course. Let's create an AI persona. And I remember I had a client that we posed this question to because everyone's too busy to train. So what if we just create some attractive and erudite AI persona? And I remember my client saying, that is some uncanny valley stuff. And we didn't proceed, but it also has to be culturally adept and culturally in line with where the organization is going. I would caution anyone about saying, okay, I don't need any more learning facilitators, but I might need fewer of them, or I might be able to now take my one learning person, and they may only need to spend half of their time on learning design and delivery because AI can help them, and we can deploy them to do something else where maybe we can help them do performance improvement type work, which is not the purest form of learning design and delivery, but which is actually highly impactful to the organization and to the success of the people involved.
Yeah, I love that live brainstorm of redeployment, right? Because the fear comes in because it's very clear. It's very easy to imagine the specific things that person is doing now that can get taken away. But you also need to think ahead about what else is possible. You also talked about redeploying talent in the right way and being proactive about that. One other aspect of rollouts with AI is the concept that it's a little bit non-linear, right? So we talk about the pilots, but with mature technology, I don't know, an HRIS or an ERP system, it could be a headache. It's been done many times and you'll get there eventually. And it's a pretty, it's like getting worked on in a house, right? Yeah, it's been done before, you'll get there, and it's predictable. It's not as much with nascent technology and all the adaptations of it. So how do you think about like nonlinear change and enabling that?
I think about it as fun and messy at the same time. So I'm one of those weird people who thinks change is fun and exciting. And whenever I hear everyone hates change, I always say, oh, what about me? I like it. But it can be both. So there's something, I think, empowering and community building about we're all in this together. We're all going to a class on how to create prompts. We're all going to have a discussion about how to deploy AI ethically, whatever that means in our organization and culture. We're all going to do a challenge where we reclaim X percent of our time using AI, and we can all think about what that means to us and our roles, and we're going to rededicate that time to something else. So there's something empowering in that group dynamic. It also means that in some cases, we may all be in danger of becoming lemmings going off a cliff together. In some cases, we try something and there's nobody to apply the brakes and say, yeah, that's actually really like interesting idea, but maybe not one we should take because nobody has that maturity, or I've seen what happens when you do it that way because we're all learning together. I think organizations also need to think about that. And that's where I say thinking about different levels of risk and different levels of technology maturity and what are we sure about, what are we uncertain about, and what's a moonshot or some kind of side project that somebody wants to try in their spare time or in the amount of time that's allotted for creativity and innovation. And it has an infinitesimal chance of being successful. We may all be in that area to varying extents because the technology is new. Whereas ERP, there's usually somebody who can tell the rest of the organization how the story ends.
Well, how you've position that. So can you tell me about a selection of use cases then, pretty precisely? I think you have some opinions on this. There's so many things that if you just think about, hey, here's a challenge to take back our time, or there's so many things that we do, it can be done more efficiently with AI. But then you have to go from that to a specific item and some things that you say, no, that's not a good idea. So maybe specifically within the HR directly use cases of AI, you mentioned, and some seem to be a big proponent of a lot of L&D workflows being enabled by that. Are there ones that you feel like you're more cautious about, where even though there might be some time or savings or efficiencies?
Yeah. So I mentioned chatbots. I would not want, and this is very culturally and organizationally dependent. So in a high touch organization, I wouldn't want to replace a kind of service center with a chatbot or a knowledge base that didn't have an easy ability to find a human in the loop. And I also, when I was a consultant, I used to do this exercise with organizations when they were building out a new people strategy or HR strategy. And we would say, are you a high touch organization? Or are you a digital first organization? And we would go through different use cases, even after they placed themselves on that spectrum. Because when someone goes out on leave, somebody is either about to have a baby or about to drive their partner to have a baby. Do they want to wait? Do they want to invest their hopes and fears in a purely technology-driven solution? Or do they want, is that the time when they want someone to say, no, you go and take care of yourself or your partner or spouse, and we'll take care of the administrivia on the leave. Or here's how you do it. Here is a step-by-step list of things you need to know so you don't have to spend your panicked and then happy time worrying about leave. So I think about some of those things as, eesh, let's not go there if it's not going to be well-received, if it's going to create a big organizational backlash, and if part of our culture is around really serving our people in the same way that we would want to be served in our hour of need, whatever it is. Another example, I've heard that there from some of my peers that there have been some interesting experiments with benefits that have not always gone well. So some of the calculations, there's a little bit of noise about, is AI really good at doing complex math problems? And so they were saying that they were getting calculations coming out of certain AI applications that they would then share back with their analytics team, and the analytics team would find the errors in the data that came out of AI. And not only is that risky in that if it's not caught anywhere, it could potentially be figured into decision making and cost the organization dollars or result in budget discrepancies, but it can also really ruin HR's reputation and with if other people are catching the errors and hallucinations in AI.
I love how you couched your opinion, and every organization is different and you have to think about it like that way, which is true. And I think what I took away from the first part of that answer was that there's maybe this vector around high touch versus low touch, white glove service for your employees on everything that you do as an organization. And that's the ethos and that's the expectation from the CEO on down, all the way to, you know, leave people alone. They prefer to find information on their own and not deal with others unless they need to. Or so that's at that level. But you might also have that philosophy wherever you stand on that spectrum for an HR team level. But what was interesting is that you're saying it also can be more white glove versus automated, depending on a specific use case. And you're drawing to attention these moments in the employee journey that maybe as an employer, you can actually use as a chance to connect strongly to your employer brand by being higher touch. And proactively deciding, even if the technology was perfect, you don't want to have, you want to make sure there's a human in the loop. I love that thinking. And there's some risks that you like rightfully point out on anytime that math is involved. I've noticed that myself many times, saying, hey, you got that wrong. Think harder and figure it out. So there may be guardrails that you need to think about, or for any kind of use case and initiative, mm-hmm. is what I'm kind of taking from that.
Yeah, I think there are a few more. One is obviously the technology adeptness of the people in the organization as well. So that may speed up or slow down things. I always used to joke about, we talk about the future of work, but some organizations are not in the present of work yet. They may be doing things that are paper-based, or there are still organizations that use green screen applications on the old like DOS type of computers, even in 2025. And can they just catapult over all of that and jump right into AI? In some cases, they can. In some cases, they don't even have the organizational capability or imagination to do so. What AI experimentation and piloting looks like for them, it's going to look really different than it does for a technology company. And then I think there are some other factors as well. So if you think about AI, another example is, let's say, can an AI crawl your handbook and come up with the right answers? What if the handbook is garbage? So there's also a little bit of a garbage in, garbage out consideration. If your documentation is not yet up to snuff, if your processes are inconsistent and you feed those into AI, you're feeding something defective into AI that is not going to be improved or optimized. It is going to be used to create an end product that is itself defective because you're putting defective information into the system.
The process and the people behind the data, especially on the HR side, to go to your benefits example, if the input from the HR generalist in the payroll system was just wrong, like the percentage right. calculation, then maybe the AI did its job right, but it calculated right. It's just the numbers are wrong. So that is just a foundational kind of element to be successful. Otherwise, you're just moving faster to the wrong place.
Exactly.
With AI. Just to close out here, maybe we can look forward a little bit, right? And zoom out. What is going to be expected more from the HR function and less from the HR function as we get more mature with organizations that are becoming more AI native and the workflows and tooling and everything starts to shift much more in the coming years?
So more technology capability and imagination. Less saying no, and the same or more amount of consideration for everything else. How is AI likely to integrate into our work, into our business, into our employee experience, and into the business goals that we are all trying to achieve as an organization? Going back to that strategic mindset, if you don't have that yet, start with that and then get on the AI bandwagon and focus on some of those questions about how it's going to impact the people in the business.
I love it. As a bonus, can I ask, do you see any new roles emerging, like new titles or new within like the HR function because of this?
I'm laughing a little bit because I've seen all these like faddish titles come and go or never even really fully arrive. Uh-huh. So, like, the chief remote experience officer.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Now they're saying like the chief AI officer. And so I always go back to my org design ethos on this and say, does this person have authority? Does this person have a team, or do they need to pull from 27 different teams that already have leaders? And what do you really expect from this person? So I tend to usually duck in cover when I see the hype about a new organizational role and actually let time play out a little bit and see if there's any there. So I think there have been organizations that have reimagined marketing and employee experience as a chief experience officer. And some organizations that are very experience focused, that could work really well. I've seen organizations that are very design focused, where they want to incorporate externally and internally focused areas of design. I like those. I'm a little bit more of a cautious person around if somebody invents a new title and writes a LinkedIn or HBR article about it, you know, that I'm going to go out and suggest to the CEO that we immediately hire or promote somebody into this role.
Okay, so maybe not. But okay, it sounds like similar to software and tool adoption, you try to not be on the bleeding edge there. Let's watch and see how this plays out and if there's any there.
Yeah, I be on the bleeding edge personally, learn, grow, you know, be curious, be on the bleeding edge of all of those things. In terms of big organizational decisions, be pragmatic, be cautious, be strategically aligned with where your organization is and whether it is or should be typically on the bleeding edge of things. There are good things about being first. There are good things about being a fast follower. And there are good things about if everyone does turn out to be a lemming going off the cliff, standing on the side and watching it happen.
Fair enough. Thank you for this conversation, Sharon.
Yeah.
Hopefully we're not all going to be lemmings and we can future-proof ourselves and our organizations by being proactive. There's so much that we talked about around the CHRO role evolving, both from self-reflection expectations as well as from our stakeholders around the C-suite board and employees. And I love the way you're thinking about on a very tactical way about how you can move some of these projects forward. So with all that said, good luck to everybody out there who is listening in and watching us as you are trying to future-proof your own organizations as well. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye now. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.